Who? The supreme, all-attractive personality of Godhead. According to Vedanta Sutra, this means that the supreme personality of Godhead, or the supreme person, Brahman, the absolute truth, is a source from whom everything emanates. The captivating power of women, and man's susceptibility to such attraction must also exist in the supreme personality of Godhead in the spiritual world, and must be represented in the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. And you've heard from Srila Prabhupada many, many times, he explains that actually the material world is just a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. So in the spiritual world, the greatest attraction and the purest attraction there is Krishna's attraction to Radharani and Srimati Radharani's incredible attraction to Krishna, so that even she abandons all mores of, you know, so-called morality, and she runs to Krishna along with the gopis. But of course, in the material world, that is pervertedly reflected by women's attraction to man and man's attraction to women. And I'd like you to, as we go on and read this purport, I'd like you to think also that it's just not that women are Maya for men, or can be Maya for men, but men can also be Maya for women. So it's always something that we need to observe how it's relating to us. We're in our different bodies according to our karma and the arrangement of the universe. So, and fortunately, when we come to Krishna consciousness, and by the grace of Srila Prabhupada, we can actually function on something that's not on this material body, on the material platform. That the devotees are functioning on the spiritual platform, or we're endeavouring to function on the spiritual platform. So we are not man and we are not woman, but we're trying to act on the platform of the spirit soul. But because we are in this conditioned state, and because we are dealing with the opposite sexes, there are particular rules of engagement, I guess you could say, the rules of behaviour of how we act with each other in a spiritual manner. The Lord is the supreme person, the supreme male. As a common male wants to be attracted by a female, that propensity similarly exists in the supreme personality of Godhead. He also wants to be attracted by the beautiful features of a woman. Now the question is, if he wants to be captivated by such womanly attraction, would he be attracted by any material woman? What does anyone think? Think that's possible? I don't think so. Now the question is, if he wants to be captivated by such womanly attraction, would he be attracted by any material woman? I think we could all say no. Prabhupada continues, it is not possible. Even persons who are in this material existence can give up womanly attraction if they are attracted by the supreme Brahman. Such was the case with Haridas Thakur. A beautiful prostitute tried to attract him in the dead of night, but since he was situated in devotional service, in transcendental love of Godhead, Haridas Thakur was not captivated. Rather, he turned the prostitute into a great devotee by his transcendental association. This material attraction, therefore, certainly cannot attract the Supreme Lord. And I'll just interject here that one should also not think that they're on the level of Haridas Thakur and take that example as something that they could actually follow. No, it's okay. I'm just befriending this Mataji. I'm just talking to this Mataji because she's a nice devotee, or I'm trying to introduce her to Krishna consciousness. But because of this overpowering attraction that the female form has for the male form, one has to be very, very careful and protect himself. And the same goes with the Vaishnavis and women in this material world. We have to be very moderate and very observant about how we behave. And we're also very, you know, we can be very expert at rationalization. And we can also be very expert at kidding ourselves. So it's very important that, of course, one remains friendly and kind. And it's not like, you know, I'm very grateful to see that our movement is not like it was in the very early days, where there was, in the very, 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 very early days, there was a great kind of family mood, where the boys and girls were all very young when we joined. Most of us were under 20. And we looked at our brothers and sisters as brothers and sisters in our service to Srila Prabhupada. And then, and Prabhupada always very much promoted Vaishnavis. He would like us to sing kirtan. We have many examples of that where he asked Madhujis to sing kirtan, lead artis, give classes. We have many examples where Prabhupada would have Jyoti Mai, who's my god sister, who was head of France BBT. She would actually give lectures in front of Prabhupada. Jamuna Devi would also do that, Nalati Devi. Many Vaishnavis Prabhupada promoted. Then, as we started to read more in Bhagavatam, more Bhagavatams were published, it came across the sloka, and these are one of them, where women are referred to as Maya. And of course, that got all the male members of our society into high dungeon. Oh, the women, they're Maya. And that actually became quite a paradigm shift in the way women were accepted in Krishna consciousness. So there was this understanding where, oh, the women were Maya, but oh no, the men were really good. But I always try and explain that we have to act on that platform where women can be Maya for men, and men can be Maya for women. But because of our society, we're a spiritual society, Srila Prabhupada loved his spiritual daughters as much as he loved his spiritual sons. We have to teach, or rather, react to each other with mutual respect. And that's very, very important that we maintain that. And women act in such a way where their behaviour is moderate and chaste, and the men behave in such a way where they're kind to the women, they're not denigrating or... and I don't think that, you know, by any means is what happens in most of our temples now, but we should always be very mindful and very careful about this kind of behaviour. And there's a very nice story that Harisori Prabhu told me, and some of you may have heard, I've told this story before, but when I was living in Mayapur as a Brahmacharini, Prabhupada had a slight cold, and Harisori gave me a little bit of silk, you know, about foot by foot, to make into a handkerchief for Prabhupada. So I made this handkerchief to Prabhupada, for Prabhupada, and then some weeks after, and Prabhupada had left Mayapur, and Harisori gave me back the handkerchief before he left, and I've kept it and I still have it. And when I facilitate the ISKCON disciple courses up north, I always bring that little handkerchief so the devotees can touch it to their head, and I recite this story. So many, many, many decades later, about 3 years ago, Harisori Prabhu came to New Govardhan, which is where I live. Does everyone know who Harisori is? You're all familiar with him? Instrumental devotee here in ISKCON, Australia. Did great service for Srila Prabhupada and was also his servant for about 18 months, I think. So anyway, Harisori came to the temple, and after he gave class, and after class I said to him, Harisori Prabhu, do you remember that little orange handkerchief that I made for Srila Prabhupada? And he said, oh, yes, yes, I do. I said, do you know if Prabhupada ever used it? And he said, yes, Prabhupada used it, and Prabhupada loved that handkerchief. I said, really? I said, I sewed it so badly. I didn't do it by hand. I just machined it on the sewing machine. The stitches were crooked. I did a really appalling job, really appalling. And if you ever see it, you know, have a look at the stitches. They're shocking. And he said, no, Prabhupada actually was extremely delighted with that. And I said, well, you know, what happened? And he said, well, he said, I went into Prabhupada's room in Mayapur and there are a number of sannyasis all sitting there talking to Srila Prabhupada. And one sannyasi in particular was saying to Prabhupada what a good sannyasi he was. I don't talk to women, Prabhupada. I don't look at women. I'm really strict sannyasi. And if you ever watch any Prabhupada videos, you'll see how often Prabhupada would actually give us a rope long enough that we could hang ourselves with. He would just let us go on. And then after some time, you suddenly realized, uh-oh, Prabhupada's not very happy with what I'm saying. And I saw this many times. So anyway, this sannyasi is being a bit self-aggrandizing. I'm trying to please Prabhupada by, you know, explaining that he takes his sannyasi vows very, very seriously. And Prabhupada's just looking down and he's not saying anything. And then Prabhupada looked up, and at that point Harisori handed the little orange handkerchief that I'd made to Prabhupada. And Harisori said that Prabhupada beamed ear to ear. And he looked at the sannyasi and he said, and I will always accept service from my spiritual daughters. So Prabhupada was very, held his female disciples, and by that his grand disciples, his great grand disciples, and so on, for generations to come, with great affection and affection and love. So we were talking about Haridas Thakur, and I mentioned that, you know, we can't put ourselves on that platform. We have to be very careful in our association, but at the same time, that should be with respect and with affection. This material attraction, therefore, certainly cannot attract the Supreme Lord. When he wants to be attracted by a woman, he has to create such a woman from his own energy. Hands up, who knows that? Who that is? Hands up. Mataji? Radha? Yes, Srimati Radharani Ki Jai. He has to create such a woman from his own energy. And what is that energy called? That energy of Radharani? Hiladini Shakti. His pleasure potency. It is explained by the Goswamis that Radharani is the manifestation of the pleasure potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When the Supreme Lord wants to derive transcendental pleasure, he has to create a woman from his internal potency. Thus, the tendency to be attracted by womanly beauty is natural because it exists in the spiritual world. In the material world, it is reflected pervertedly, as I mentioned before, and therefore there are so many inebrieties. Instead of being attracted by material beauty, if one is accustomed to be attracted by the beauty of Radharani and Krishna, then the statement of Bhagavad Gita, Param Drishtva Nivatate, holds true. When one is attracted by the transcendental beauty of Radha and Krishna, he is no longer attracted by material feminine beauty. That is the special significance of Radha Krishna worship. That is testified to by Yamuna Acharya. He says, since I have become attracted by the beauty of Radha and Krishna, when there's attraction for a woman or a memory of sex life with a woman, I at once spit on it and my face turns in disgust. When we are attracted by Madan Mohan and the beauty of Krishna and his consorts, then the shackles of conditioned life, namely the beauty of a material woman, cannot attract us. And I reiterate, the same goes for the Matajis, that, you know, when we're experiencing some mundane attraction, we need to shift our focus back to the Supreme Lord. Krishna and Radharani, and look at Krishna in that with eyes of devotion. I'll just read that verse again. Just try to understand the mighty strength of my Maya in the shape of woman, who by the mere movement of her eyebrows can keep even the greatest conquerors of the world under her grip. There's also another great hero. Prabhupada talks about Cleopatra here. There's also another great hero in Indian history who became undone by a woman. He became victim of a woman's charm, and that was the Mahastrin Bajirai. Has everyone heard of him? Bajirai? He was a prime minister many centuries ago, and he was, you know, married to a very loving wife, but he became enamored by actually a young Muslim princess, daughter of a Hindu father and a Muslim mother. And he became so attracted to her that he pretty much gave up his dharma. And then, of course, he was, unfortunately, due to the politics, the Mahastrin politics, he had a you know, very sad life in the end. And in Bhagavatam, Prabhupada explains that the wife is the cause, actually, of all kinds of success. We've read here how women can be Maya, and I've mentioned that men can also be Maya. But a woman is also, for her husband, brings all success in dharma, in artha, in karma, and moksha, Srila Prabhupada explains. That through religious practices, through economic development, through enjoyment, sense gratification, and then final liberation, the wife is like the fort, and it talks about that in Srimad Bhagavatam as well, that she actually has great power and influence over her husband. And if the wife is a religious and righteous, virtuous wife, then the husband is very blessed. And in Bhagavatam it also explains that what is actually important, that the male has the brahmachari training, that he has training in from, you know, well, from youth ideally, like all of these lovely children here, they're trained in, will be trained in brahmachari life, and the daughters are being trained in, you know, to be expert in many things, not just cooking, something that I never unfortunately got trained in. Hare Krishna. So it's very important that the husband has the training. And when he has the training in control of the senses, in brahmachari life, it's not that when the man marries that all of that training goes out the window. Now I can just behave like a grihamedi. No, he has to, through his training, he behaves like a grihasta, which is in control of the senses. So that's the role of the woman. And, you know, when you read, when you study Srimad Bhagavatam and you listen to Prabhupada's lectures, you can actually understand how critical the role the Vaishnavis play. The role they play in society, the role they play as the mother, because the man will be successful by two things, Prabhupada explains. A good mother and a good wife. Because the wife is also like the shelter. The husband gives guidance to the wife, of course, he gives her shelter. Excuse me. But it's actually, there's a synergy there between the two. They're actually reciprocal. There may be different ways that the wife gives shelter to the husband, but the husband may give, you know, provide physical shelter. He's the bigger, the stronger in a lot of cases, you know. I know one of the reasons why, actually the only reason why I got married, I was a very staunch brahmacharini for 5 years, and the only reason I got married was I was sick of battling with the brahmacharis in Mayapur to get, because I looked after a number of little Bengali girls, They would help me sew, make garlands, etc. We didn't have a school for them at that stage. And I would try and get an allocation of cloth and a little itty bitty bit of soap and a few things, because Mayapur was very, very austere in those days and very poor. So we didn't have a great deal to eat, and we didn't have much opulence in the way of soap or cloth or anything like that. And one brahmachari, he was actually in charge of the godown. So he was the one that distributed the soap, distributed the cloth, etc. And he would never give me what I needed for the little girls. So I would always have to argue with him. And he had a much louder voice than I did, a really strident voice. And he'd basically, you know, would win out most of the time. So that was the reason why I thought, okay, I've had this. I'm sick of fighting with this brahmachari. I'm going to get married and my husband can fight with him. But of course, life doesn't always turn out the way that you want. But it was interesting, that motivation. But, you know, and I see the marriages that my sons, I have three sons, two live in Mayapur, one in Australia. And I can see they've been trained in brahmachari life. They've two out of three were born in Mayapur. They went through the whole Gurukul system. I can see how through their training, they actually, I believe, have made very, very good husbands, because they're very, they've been trained to understand the nature of women. Bhakti Vijayapurna Swami has given them very good understanding of the psychology of a woman, because it does differ from the psychology of a man. We've probably all heard of that book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, so there's quite a difference there. But through that training, they've actually, I believe, they have great, great respect for their wives. They take shelter of their wives, and the wives take shelter of them. So it's a symbiotic relationship, and I think that's very important. So first of all, just reiterating the point I made before, is that the husband has to have that training. He can't see his wife as just a representation of sense gratification and there solely for his pleasure. No. The husband and the wife are together solely for the pleasure of Radha Ballabha and Jagannath Baladev Subhadra and Gauri Thai. So when the family has that, and I can see that with these wonderful children here, they're so... I know that when you all go home, your homes are like a temple, because otherwise your children wouldn't behave like they do in the temple. If when you went home, it was just, you know, TV blaring and, you know, the news going on all day. You know, I can tell that, you know, you have given them a wonderful Krishna conscious home. And this morning when I was doing Tulsi Aarti, there's a little tot, I think like 2 years old, he's not here at the moment. And, you know, I gave him some water, helped him put the water in the Tulsi, and then he starts circumambulating. And then he puts his hand in the Tulsi soil and puts it to his head. The training is so wonderful, and I really admire you all so much that you're bringing your children up in this lovely Krishna conscious atmosphere. It's so important. So, you know, it is this dual relationship. And as I said, it's very important to have that brahmachari training. And also it's very important for the women to have that proper training as well. If you've had the fortune that you can go through the Brahmacharini ashram, that's very nice. But all of Indian body devotees have probably had that very nice training in your own homes through the expertise of your own mother, your own father. So the Krishna conscious wives, as I said, offer the greatest support, protection and shelter. So by a woman's chastity, and when I say submissiveness, I don't mean in that you know, downtrodden way. I don't mean that at all. I mean that, you know, I truly believe that the husband needs to see the wife as his equal, but in a different kind of equal, because she can give so many different things that he can't give in terms of a softer nature, in terms of a softer attitude, perhaps a more loving attitude, where the husband or a male might be a little bit more tough. A woman's influence has a very positive effect on a male as well. And, you know, I can even see that in our national council meetings, because I'm the women's minister of ISKCON Australia. And it's very interesting to see that interaction. And I think having a woman on that council, Kundalata, of course, is there. She takes all the minutes very expertly. But I think it's very important, because a woman will have a different understanding, and I believe in many ways, a better understanding sometimes. But don't quote me on that. So the real Patni, the devoted wife, is a wife who helps her husband execute devotional service. That's critical, that you work together. That you don't, oh, Prabhu, you have to go to the temple again. Why don't you give me some family time? You know, let's just spend the time with the son or the daughter. Why do we always have to go to that Hare Krishna temple? But no, you work together. Of course, there has to be family time as well. You know, there is the balance. And unlike the very early days where you couldn't even, you know, a man wouldn't even hold his child in the temple. It was like, oh no, you know, wife and the kids at the back, don't have anything to do with them. That's changed so much, and for a great positive effect as well, that there is this mood of family unity and family strength working together, because two is always stronger than one. So when one is maybe feeling a little weak in Krishna consciousness, then the other party, whether it's the husband or the wife, can actually inspire their partner. And it doesn't have to be by, you know, hitting them over the head with the rolling pin or, you know, chastising the wife. Oh, you're in so much maya, why don't you get up and chat your ass? But no, together by the example you set. And this also reminds me of how important the woman's role is. For example, one of my daughters-in-law, we use the WhatsApp technology. I love WhatsApp, and because I have most of my family living in Mayapur. So the first thing I do when I wake up in the morning, before I even get out of bed, the first thing I do is I chant Hare Krishna, and then I grab my mobile phone. And because of the time difference, I can read the Bhagavatam quotes that my daughter-in-law has posted. So every day she's reading Bhagavatam, and she laboriously types that into the phone, and then all of her family share what she's been reading. And it's such a wonderful thing. You know, it's a very proactive, you know, a small thing. It's no big drama, but it brings us all together, that the first thing, oh, we're reading. And it's interesting, the thing she's been posting on WhatsApp recently is about these type of verses, about that the wife is the shelter of the husband as well. And she's also the energy of the man. The man gets a lot of energy from the power of the wife. So when, and of course these days, generally both partners are working. But in a case where the wife is looking after the children at home, when the husband comes back from his work, because, you know, bills have to be paid, they can't all, you know, be in the temple doing service all day. You have to support your family and and you're also able to give then donations to the temple, etc., acting like a true grihasta. But how nice is it when you come home, and you come home to a nice Krishna conscious atmosphere where there's, you know, incense has been burning, there's bhajans going, where, you know, the children are Krishna conscious. So that's a very valuable role that a woman can play. But it's also for a man too. Don't want him to come home being all grouchy pants. Had a hard day at the office. Ah, that guy across the partition, I can't stand him. My boss is such a jerk. No, you try and leave that behind you. And when you go into your home, then you're re-entering Vaikuntha. You're re-entering your temple that's home. I think that's very, very important. And as I said before, Prabhupada explains that a man is successful with a good mother and a good wife. So you're all training your sons very nicely, training them how to be Krishna conscious. And, you know, it's so important that this training happens from youth. It doesn't mean that, you know, you can't be purified or absorbed. You know, I didn't become a devotee till I was 20. Many of us joined, you know, later in life, maybe not from childhood. But the process is so powerful, the purification takes place. But this is also very wonderful that when we can train our children, because children are like blotting paper. Can anyone remember what blotting paper is? The younger generation, you know what a blotting paper is? Well, in the old days, when you used a pen and ink, you had this absorbent, papery material that you'd put over the ink to absorb the excess so it wouldn't smear. And then you'd turn over and that blotting paper would have the exact writing, you know, because you blotted it. So children are like that. They're like blotting paper. Everything that they hear, every way that they're treated, it all is absorbed. So, and it's always a very sad thing when you might go to the supermarket and you see some lady, you know, treating her child really roughly and, you know, berating the child as misbehaving or, you know, something like that. And you always feel that, oh gosh, you know, how are they, if they're treated like that outside the home, how are they being treated inside the home? So it's very important, of course, you have to be firm with your child. That very important that it's done in a loving way. And Prabhupada explains that when he was a child, and Prabhupada admits himself he was a very naughty child. If you read Prabhupada Lilamrita, there's wonderful pastimes about Prabhupada's early childhood. So everyone here read Prabhupada Lilamrita? Anyone who hasn't? Don't be shy. Hands up if you haven't. I beseech you with a straw in my teeth, with full dandabats, please read Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita. Because that will give you more of an idea. I mean, Prabhupada said, if you want to know me, read my books. Yes, that is a fact. Because Prabhupada's books transcend time, they transcend space. It doesn't matter where Prabhupada's no longer present on the planet in his Vapu form. Notwithstanding, you will all develop an intimate relationship with Srila Prabhupada. But when you read the Lilamrita, you read so many pastimes and you learn more about everything that Srila Prabhupada went through. So I humbly beg you, please, if you just read 15 minutes of that every day, you will have greater Prabhupada consciousness. And if you have greater Prabhupada consciousness, you will have greater Krishna consciousness. Because for ISKCON, without Prabhupada, we have nothing. And it's essential, it's critical for the future of our International Society for Krishna Consciousness that we keep Prabhupada in the centre. If we don't keep Prabhupada in the centre, down the track there will be factions, down the track there will be discrepancies, and down the track Prabhupada's sacrifice will be compromised. And Prabhupada sacrificed everything for us. So it's really important that we have that, you know, understanding that Prabhupada is the centre. And that's why we always, when we're referring to Srila Prabhupada, in writings or on our websites, anywhere, it's always Founder Acharya of ISKCON, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And it's very interesting that right in the very early days when there was just one little temple with a few devotees and they got some letterhead printed, Prabhupada had printed Founder Acharya. Because Prabhupada knew what this movement would become. He knew how fast it would spread. But we didn't. And the devotees thought, oh, Founder Acharya, international society, why are we, you know? We're not international. There's just like 10 of us in this one little temple in, you know, New York. And look how it spread in just a very short time, even while Prabhupada was 11 years, I think. He opened 108 temples, centres, travelled all around the world numerous times, I think 13 times, something like that. Indefatigable in his energy. Even if he was ill, he would still preach. So an amazing story that in Mayapur, Srila Prabhupada had a very high fever. He had such a high fever that he could not get out, not get out of bed, he couldn't raise his head. He had such a high fever. And a very important politician had come to Mayapur, not the Prime Minister, but very, very, obviously not the Prime Minister, but very high up in the Bengal government. And he had come to see Srila Prabhupada. And the devotee said to this gentleman, look, Srila Prabhupada is very, very ill, but let me go speak to him. So I don't think you'll be able to see Prabhupada today. So the devotee went up to Srila Prabhupada in his room and said, oh, Srila Prabhupada, I've told, I don't know his name, but let's call him Mr. Banerjee. I've told Mr. Banerjee that you can't, he can't see you at the moment. And because he had come all that way from Calcutta, and he was a, you know, it was important to develop that relationship because he had influence in the government, and it was important for visas and for preaching and representing ISKCON properly. Because in those very early days in India, they thought we were, surprisingly, CIA agents. And Mayapur Chandradaya Mondir was referred to as the American mutt. So there was a lot of bad press that was very important that we, you know, establish a you know, proper impression. And when they told Prabhupada, oh, look, we've told him that you can't see him, we'll give him prasadam and we'll give him a tour. And Prabhupada went, no, immediately Prabhupada got up from his bed, dressed, freshened up, went downstairs, and he preached to that man for 2 hours with full energy, preaching up a storm, as only Srila Prabhupada could do. And then, after 2 hours, no one could see that Prabhupada was so ill. And after 2 hours, the gentleman went away, and Prabhupada went up to his quarters and just collapsed. You know, amazing, amazing pastimes of Srila Prabhupada. So it's nearly time to finish. Reiterating again that the household and the home itself will be very pleasing. You come home and you feel shelter. When you come to the temple, immediately you feel shelter. Ah, Krishna, thank you. Immediately your mind is peaceful. You rejoice with the association of devotees. And your home is also like that, can also be like that, and I'm sure is like that, a place of Krishna consciousness. And, you know, once again, women are like fire, men are like butter. Women must, the greatest power a woman has, of course, is her chastity and is her shyness. And that is also a way that a woman controls that power by her shyness. And that doesn't mean that, you know, a false shyness, that you can't speak up, you can't give a class. I mean, I actually I like to hide behind my PowerPoint presentations. I'm a big PowerPoint presenter. I mean, when I say big, I'm not, but I like PowerPoint. But it's very funny, and I have to tell you this story. When Kundalata picked me up from the airport yesterday, and the reason I've down here is because we're presenting a workshop today, or I'm not presenting it, I'm co-hosting it with Melbourne Temple on the prevention of gender violence. And we have two very expert women in their field, highly qualified professionals, and they will be giving this today. And hopefully we'll have a good representation of devotees here. Unfortunately, the seminar at the farm occurred at the same time, and although I'd had this book for 3 months, but there was a little bit of a right hand not knowing the left hand, so we couldn't get as many as we hoped to get, but it should be very good. Anyway, so we're driving back from the airport, and we're talking about the role of women in ISKCON and what it used to be like, and et cetera, et cetera. And Kundalata, and she was telling me about Melbourne Temple, how, you know, Vaishnavis give class and can lead, et cetera, et cetera. And I was telling her about New Govardhan, how if a Mataji wants to lead any kirtan, whether it's Mangalati, Guru Puja, Tulsi Puja, whatever, all she has to do is get the pair of kartals and start singing. It's very egalitarian. So, and Kundalata said that, oh, Annie Root is, you know, often tries to get me to give class. She said, but I can't give class. I feel too shy. And I said, I also don't give class. I give presentations. I give the ISKCON disciple course, but I don't give Bhagavatam class at New Govardhan. And just that second, my phone rang. That second, and it was Shukadev, saying, oh, Mataji, can you give Bhagavatam class tomorrow? And I went, oh, yes, Prabhu, I'll give class. But it was like Krishna was speaking to me. That very second I'm going to Kundalata, yeah, I know, I actually don't like your Bhagavatam class. And that phone call came. So I thought, no, I can't say no to Krishna. It's like Krishna has personally, very kindly inviting me to speak whatever I can speak. So I had to accept. So I should also give Bhagavatam class in New Govardhan sometimes as well. So I will do that. So a woman can, you know, a woman knows that she has an attraction for the man, at least while they're young. Once you hit 50, you're at the invisible age, so it's very good. I actually love being old. except for the sore knees and the sore backs, etc. So a chaste woman, she knows that she has this shakti-wielding power. So she, out of consideration, she remains a little aloof in her day-to-day dealings. And she dresses modestly. There's no point in, you know, being shy or trying to, you know, be chaste and you're walking around in a little itty-bitty mini skirt or something, you know, so just, you know, a woman will, you know, behave nicely. It's her shyness is her natural protection. And it's also her beauty. So it's not that a moderate amount of shyness is unattractive. It's actually very attractive. But it's attractive on a spiritual platform. But by saying that, I think it's very important that if the Vaishnavis have a predilection to give a class or to lead a kirtan or to, I know women have administrative roles here in Melbourne and elsewhere, New Govardhan to do also, don't feel that, oh, I can't do it, you know, I'm a shy Mataji. No, that's not real shyness, because when you're doing things like this, you're preaching or you're doing some administrative role, you're actually acting on the spiritual platform. You're not that body. And Prabhupada would often quote Chanaka Pandit, where he said, Chanaka Pandit says women are less intelligent. And three times he said this in front of my god sister, Yamuna Devi. And the third time, Prabhupada, and he would always look at her when he said it, you know, like mischievously. And then this third or fourth time, Prabhupada looked at her after he said that, and he said, so Yamuna Devi, what do you think? And Yamuna said, yes, Prabhupada, whatever, you know, if you think that, if he says that, yes, women are less intelligent. And Prabhupada said, if you think you're a woman, then you are less intelligent. We're not functioning on that material platform. We're not functioning. And if you want to go drill down to the brass tacks, in Bhagavatam it explains that a woman is considered less intelligent. And why do you think a woman is considered less intelligent? It's obviously not because her brain can't function as well as a man can. We just need to look at the material world. We have women CEOs, we have, you know, we had a prime minister who was a woman, we had, you know, so many. It's that calculation does not work. The difference is because our emotional intelligence can be compromised. And in Bhagavatam, I think it's sixth canto, Prabhupada explains why, or how can that be compromised? It can be compromised by the flattery of unscrupulous men. It can be compromised by the flattery of unscrupulous men. So we need to understand where our heads are at and don't listen to empty flattery, because it's, you know, that's the way that we can be affected. And the men also need to, you know, examine their motives. I'm not talking about husband and wife relationship. I'm not talking about that. The husband should flatter the wife every day. Oh, you look so beautiful in that sari. Your tilak is so nice. You know, that's very important. I'm talking about the normal, you know, external relationships we have with each other. That's very important. And I think I've covered... Okay, in Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 9, verse 27, in a purport, Srila Prabhupada says, shyness is particular extra natural beauty of the fair sex, and it commands respect from the opposite sex. It's very, you know, that's a really lovely point. But, you know, for our service, sometimes we have to, you know, be a bit more forthright. In the National Council, I have to be very forthright. I can't just sit there and be very shy and not say anything. I have to express my opinion. I have to disagree if there's something that I think needs to, you know. So it's a shyness that's not artificial. And it's a shyness that doesn't compromise your ability to serve Srila Prabhupada or to serve the deities, Radha Balabha. And once again, it's, you may not have a predilection. It's not that every man loves to give Bhagavatam class, isn't it? It's, you know, it's a challenge to sit here on the seat of Vyasa and try to speak, you know. And, you know, when we feel like I feel, you know, very unqualified. But by Prabhupada's mercy, it's our duty. So I'm saying to the Vaishnavis, it's like the last thing you will want to do because you really just can't do it. It's not that you have to force yourself. But on the other hand, like I had to force myself today, and the thought did cross my mind. I could have said, oh, no, I'm really tired. Oh, no, I have so much work to do to prepare for this workshop. But it really felt that Krishna was giving me, you know, and Prabhupada was telling me, no, you give class. So I humbly thank you for listening. I hope that I've been able to, you know, be of some help in giving my view of Krishna consciousness. Jai, Hare Krishna, glorious to Srila Prabhupada. Jai Om Vishnu Pada Paramahansa Paravijakacharya Astatata Satasri Srimad Esi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Gantaraj Bhagavatam Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. Hare Krishna. Jai Srila Prabhupada. And could I just add, if...